Welcome. This is the Tomahawk Show. Don't forget to subscribe and rate 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Always tweet us at hashtag Tomahawk. Of course, our most recent show was our most popular show of all time. We had the amazing fast food draft.
The ratings were through the roof.
The ratings were over 1 million listeners. So make sure you go back and listen. Yeah, 1 million listeners per second. So make sure you go back and listen. It was definitely a lot of fun. I think the people on Twitter made sure that your humble host, Joe Thomas, right here with Andrew Hawkins. I think I was definitely the one that won.
I haven't checked the poll recently, but this might have been the first draft Joe won, and I still don't think you won.
NFD, what were the results?
The results are in. Joe got 67% of the votes.
That's ridiculous.
Got 23%. And my undrafted team still got 10% of the votes. You compared me to an arena league team, I got 10% of the votes.
Did you hear that spin he just did?
I heard it.
I still got 10%. You lost.
There. Shameless plug.
Shameless plug. Like, everything can't be positive. You took the L, bro.
I did.
I can't believe Joe won.
I only
like yours better than Joe.
We only drafted 10 teams, so there's lots of fast food out there that people are going to just like by chance that are going to fall into Danny's lap.
Right.
So, of course, he's going to get at least 10%. I think 10% was sort of the minimum. That was the basement floor. If I would have been taking undrafted, it would have been at least 15 to 20%. But I am your humble co-host, and I would never talk about myself like that.
Well, there was a lot of shenanigans surrounding Hawk, though. The tweet came in that said... you made fun of me and said I couldn't take Subway because they don't have a drive-thru.
Yeah.
But not all Starbucks have drive-thru. That was your second round pick.
Yeah.
Hashtag void.
All you need is one.
Well, then why couldn't I have Subway?
Actually, I wouldn't even care because the Starbucks pick, it was a true draft because what happens in a draft is you have a plan, things go haywire, and then you just deviate. Starbucks wasn't even on my board.
Really? Oh, wow. Oh, my gosh. That's a hot take.
You picked Culver's second round. I thought it was the dumbest pick. So then I went dumb pick, but I was like, okay, dumb pick to dumb pick, Starbucks will beat that one. Because, you know, I feel like everyone likes Starbucks, or that's all I hear about, at least. They're worth $20 gajillion. And it threw my whole draft off. If I can go back, I wouldn't have made that pick.
From the guy that doesn't even drink coffee. He went with Starbucks, and that screwed up his entire board, and he's admitting it right now. And I think really your big mistake was drafting Raising Cane's. Because now, granted, I've done a little bit of research. I am a food guy, and the stuff looks really good, actually. But nobody's ever heard of it, so it's hard to win a popularity contest.
No one's ever heard of it. You've never heard of it.
I also had never heard of it, and I got destroyed on Twitter for it.
So did he.
Destroyed.
All of a sudden, he doesn't even see those tweets. People are like, what the hell you mean you never heard of Raising the Cane's?
But let's be honest. You got a lot of hate because you didn't know what Culver's was.
I did get a lot
And there was a lot of people on Twitter that were excited about Culver's. And actually, they're building a Culver's like right down the road from my house, according to the great people on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I've accepted the challenge to take you boys to a beautiful, delicious meal at a fine Culver's in Northeast Ohio.
And I can't wait to take you guys. But that's your fault, too, because you described Culver's as some mom and pop shop in Wisconsin.
Yes.
That no one ever heard of, unlike your uncle owned it or something.
Yeah, like a chain.
Come
my
to
uncle
find
be
out,
very like, rich.
200 nationwide.
200, there's like 2,000.
Yeah, come to my uncle's for some cheese curds.
Exactly. It was like McDonald's little sister. Yeah. Well, or whatever.
Well, you know, the way that I was eating this weekend reminds me that we're just coming off of a Memorial Day weekend, a great holiday to spend with your family and your friends.
I hope you do Memorial Day better than you do Mother's Day.
Yes, I actually did. I rewarded my wife with a beautiful trip to Arizona. We went to Scottsdale with some friends. We rented an Airbnb, and our friends actually have kids. So it was kind of a crazy 4 days. We had 8 kids under the age of 5, my 5-year-old was the oldest, supposedly the responsible one, which was very frightening because she was not responsible enough at all. So it was a scary weekend. It was really hot. It was almost 100 degrees every day, but we had a pool, so that was really nice. And it was a lot of fun. I got to cook breakfast every morning. I'm starting to become a little bit of a chef.
Wow.
I think the NFL actually will give us money to go back to school. So I need to go check in to see if they will send me back to culinary school with that extra money that we've negotiated in the CBA for no reason other than I want to be a killer breakfast and dinner chef for my family. How great would that be?
I think you would be an incredible chef.
How fun would that be, though? Like, if your dad was just like, he went to chef culinary school just so he could make sweet, like, pancakes in the morning for you from scratch. That's what I want to do in retirement.
I'm going to go to massage school. Is it called massage school?
Masseuse therapy?
Yeah. No,
I can't wait to hear where
massage.
I can't wait to hear where you take this one.
I'm gonna work at like Massage Envy or something.
Can you imagine showing up at Massage Envy and like, would you like a male or a female therapist? And you're like, I don't know, whatever, I don't care. And all of a sudden, Andrew's in the room in a robe.
Like, what's up,
I would turn around and walk right out.
Get dressed and put your variables on the counter. I'll begin in a second.
Go ahead and take everything off.
What kind of pressure? No. Kind of pressure you like, bro? Yeah. Yeah? All right, cool.
Hey, this is not one of those keep your underwear on massages, right? You make sure you get everything undressed. Put that towel over you.
Glutes. It's my style.
So anyways, what did you guys do for Memorial Day?
We actually didn't do much. So I travel so much that like holidays or any way to celebrate is me just sitting in my house, and my wife hates it. She hates that I'm such a homebody, and I'm turning my kids into the same thing.
Ooh.
They're like, ooh, it's hot outside. Why don't we go outside? I'm like, yeah, it's such a great idea. There's air conditioning in here. But for Memorial Day, I actually did cook breakfast.
Nice.
Yeah, I cooked breakfast. I cooked pancakes, grits. You eat grits?
I'm not a grits guy. You know, when I got to college, it was the first time I really experienced grits.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a big fan.
Yeah, I'm a grits guy.
So it's plain. Grits, it's if you grew up with
pancakes,
it.
Pancakes, sausage, toast, and bacon.
So what did you put in your grits? Because that's the big thing about grits. Grits is like rice. It's just plain. There's nothing to it unless you add a bunch of stuff. I think that's real like traditional. Like your family did this, so that's the way you like them.
Heavy pepper guy, heavy butter guy.
Pepper and butter.
Pepper and butter is like, I need it creamy and I need it spicy. I need a little kick to it.
Yeah.
But that was my Memorial Day. Actually, no. I had some friends come over. We actually did grill out.
Well, it sounds fun.
My wife did the grilling, though. My parents came in town late. Hey, surprise visit.
Great.
So we had like a fake Memorial Day celebration, which we didn't plan on.
What did your wife grill?
Burgers. We cook fries. Anytime I eat burgers, whether we're grilling out or
not. Fries are good.
Fries. Hit hot dogs. We had baked beans, which is my favorite.
I like baked beans.
Memorial Day food. Mm-hmm. Barbecue baked beans.
Mm-hmm.
Broccoli salad.
Oh, broccoli salad's good.
Not a vegetable.
Not
guy.
A surprise.
What else?
How's that six pack doing?
Oh, it is bad. It is not looking good. I am, and this is the first time I'm actually announcing it, but I'm supposed to play in the All American Flag Football League.
Whoa.
Which is coming up in July. And I have now to then to get into playing shape. I've been trying. It's just like I said, the travel schedule has been so crazy. I haven't been as consistent as I would like to. I don't want to go out there and give an inferior Andrew Hawkins product, so I'm putting myself against the clock right now on the Tomahawk Show.
So when's the first workout? Can the Tomahawk Show do a live podcast from your first workout?
We're going to do Hard Knocks?
We're going to do a Hard Knocks.
American Flag Football League with Andrew Hawkins?
Training camp with Andrew Hawkins.
Wow. When you tear your hamstring off the bone in the first workout, that's going to be the end of the Hard Knocks because I can't run and neither can Danny Boy.
When I'm the first player to get cut in American Flag Football League history, it's going to be ratings through the roof.
Well, tell me more about this Flag Football League.
Yeah, I wish I could. I just need to get in shape.
Well, I saw something. The winning team gets like $1 million or something.
Whoa, you're going to be a millionaire?
And how come you didn't ask me to play on that team?
So how it works is they have an amateur pool and a pro pool. So there's four pro teams. There's players like Michael Vick is playing in it. Ocho Cinco's in it. Justin Forsett. Those are like the three team captains. Who else? Nate Robinson from the NBA, who was a college football player. He's playing it. I think Carlos Boozer's playing in it.
Boy.
Each team needs a crossover athlete on their team
for
the pro pool. Well, the amateur pool, they go across the country. The winner of that pool plays the winner of the pro pool. And the two teams, whoever wins the game, $1 million, winner takes all. On the NFL Network this summer, so everyone will be able to watch and watch me embarrass myself if I don't get in the shape that I need to.
Who's your QB?
My QB is, you're going to like this one. Seneca Wallace is my QB.
Oh, Sensen!
Yeah.
Friend of the show.
We love Seneca Wallace.
If I had to pick, Michael Vick, Seneca. I'm going with the Tomahawk, but.
Actually, Seneca would be a great flag football quarterback.
Yeah.
I mean, I have no idea what type of shape he's in. Maybe he's been on the Andrew Hawkins workout program.
Right. Yeah.
And his shape is very round.
Yeah.
But, you know, back when he was playing, he could move. He could throw real smart, real quick. I mean, he had everything you could want in a flag football quarterback. He was short, but in flag football, it doesn't matter.
Yeah,
you don't have to throw over a big line.
I was like, I got recruited pretty hard by a couple of teams.
Did you really? Did you get a signing bonus?
I did not get a signing bonus. I got an Instagram post. That's what I got.
Is that what it's come down to?
You get $1 million. We're
going to split the million. I'll get it on the back end. That's my thing. But we need to do podcast live from the game. So
that'd be fun.
Clear your schedules, fellas.
Where did you say the game's being played?
I think Dallas.
Oh, it's going to be hot, too. Man, you better start getting outside running, dude.
did that make you want to go there because Dallas was the site of your your TV show, right?
That's where I start. That's where it all started.
That's where it starts circle. And that's where it ends, you know?
Full circle, exactly.
Fairy tale story.
All right, what else we got? Oh, can we backtrack really quick, fast food? How about Chipotle gets a drive-through 2 days, a day after we filmed the show?
I think they heard that they were ineligible from our draft and were so upset about it.
They were like, this
millions
is
of fans
time.
Outraged because they would have been the top pick, right? Everyone's
exactly.
number one on the big board, right?
Joe still would have went with
Culver's,
Chick-fil-A, and then Culver's. But mine would have been Chipotle, McDonald's. And I don't like how he had all burger joints and got 67%, but we got to move on from that. I apologize.
The majority of fast food is burger joints.
Yeah.
But my number one pick was Chick-fil-A, and it was loved by all.
Yeah.
Let's move on.
But anyway, my Memorial Day was great. Thanks for asking, guys.
Yeah, I did. I put it out there, and then Hawk just cut you off like usual. Yeah. What did you do on Memorial Day?
We went to my brother's house, and we had a lot of kids. There was about 15 kids.
Oh, my goodness
aged
gracious.
Six and younger.
That sounds awful.
And he's got a huge trampoline.
Oh, wow.
And all the kids got on it.
Oh, my.
And they put the hose on because, like you said, it was so hot.
Yeah.
And my mom
dangerous.
Was having a heart attack. What's the weight limit on this thing? But it was
so
fun.
You were spraying the water on the trampoline as the kids jumped on it.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds
actually put
like six broken arms.
He was spraying the water from his lawn chair. So he was like sitting next to it, holding the hose over the railing. That's funny.
But it was good. We went there in the afternoon, and then we stayed, and we watched the Cavs game, which that was game 7,
yeah,
which was awesome.
Awesome game.
I assume you guys watched that. You guys were probably at Boston courtside, right?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
I was sitting
right
beside Mr. Kraft. Me, Mr. Kraft, and Meek Mill were all courtside watching game 7.
Yeah.
Which is one of the topics we'll start off with. On the show today, we got the Cavs. We're going to talk some NFL news. We're going to do the Tomahawk Q&A per usual. And, of course, we got to talk about the top 100 NFL list.
It's everyone's favorite.
We've been waiting. I think today is finally the day we'll let everyone know exactly where we sit as far as the top players in the NFL goes.
Absolutely.
But back to the Cavs game. I'm becoming more and more of a LeBron fan every day. I was already a LeBron fan. If you deep dive into my Twitter since, like, 08, I've been on that train, which is when kind of I started my Twitter game. But as time goes on, I'm becoming like, I'm like fanboying.
Can we back this up for a second? How early were you on Twitter? Because you got the name Hawk. Like, that is unbelievable. Were you the first person on Twitter?
I wasn't the first person on Twitter. I think I'm 09, early 09. I think like March of 09.
And that's really
Twitter.
Early in the game, right? I mean,
it was early in the game. I didn't get Hawk back then, though.
Really?
My Twitter name was actually Young Baby Hawk.
That's embarrassing. I'm shocked that you said that on the air.
Yeah. No, that was like till like recently.
All right.
That's like what I'm known as. Like people in Cincinnati call me Baby Hawk. No one calls me Hawk. I didn't grow up till I got here to Cleveland. I became Hawk when I got here. Cincinnati people see me like,
you
Baby
got to
Hawk,
drop
how
the baby.
Doing? Like literally still. Like the owner of the Bengals still calls me Baby Hawk.
Really?
Yes.
So at what point did you switch from Young Baby Hawk?
No, when I started making all that money, that baby got grown real quick.
And Hawk was just available?
No, I actually had, you know, you get up, you got connections. So I called a guy who knew a guy, and boom, I got Hawk on Twitter. Called a guy who knew a guy, boom, I got Hawk on Instagram. Called a guy who knew a guy, and I got Hawk on Facebook. So I'm actually working on the Snapchat right now. A guy actually messaged me last week.
Did you know a guy, though? The guy knew a guy.
The guy knew me. At that point, when you know so many guys, the guys start knowing you, Dan.
Here's a question, though. Was there like some poor guy in Western New York that was at Hawk?
Steve Hawk.
His name is Steve Hawk. He was into Twitter. Like, he's like a techie. He's like a nerd. In 2006, he was like, you know, I'm going to go with at Hawk as my handle. And all of a sudden, he woke up one morning. He probably had 75 followers. And he got a message from Twitter. Sorry, your at Hawk name has been stolen from you and given to somebody more popular and more famous.
There was a guy.
Do you feel bad about yourself?
Absolutely not.
Steve Hawk cries himself to sleep every night.
That's not my problem. Steve Hawk should.
Clearly.
It's going to be when he sues your ass. I messaged a guy who had Hawk on Twitter. He was actually using a different name. He was an illustrator. I believe it was at Hawkster is his name he uses. And he's like an incredible illustrator. Like he's incredible.
He has real talent, unlike us.
He wasn't using at Hawk. And I would like, there's old tweets. And I'm like, hey, you know. And he was just like, nah, leave me alone. And then all of a sudden, I just had it. So I don't know how it went from his hands to somebody else's. All I know is I have it now, and I'm never letting it go.
Can you imagine all those sad people that had ad hoc, and they just got it stolen from eminent domain? You know, there's a lot of, like, court cases that go to the Supreme Court about the little old lady who's had the home for 100 years, and, like, the hotel needs it. They need her property to build, like, the massive Hilton, so they just go in and take it and give her, like, just supposedly just compensation.
For branding purposes?
You have done eminent domain to that poor little old lady in Western New York and just stolen her Twitter handle.
They weren't doing it justice. Look at all the justice it gets now. I'm sure AJ Hawk looks at my Twitter name and is like, this D-bag. Because
his name is actually Hawk.
His name is actually Hawk.
Dude, it was pretty funny. I actually went on a national radio show. I don't remember if it was Lebatard or one of these other ones. And
I think it was the... What was it?
Or maybe it was an XM show or something.
Go ahead. I don't know.
But the story is, how would you know what it is?
Because I think I was paying attention. Don Patrick, the Don Patrick show.
Oh, yeah, it was Dan Patrick.
Don.
You called him Don. That's actually, you owe him one.
My bad.
Yeah,
Don
Patrick. I was on the Don Patrick show.
It'd be funny.
And they made a mistake.
Don Patrick show.
Yeah, the Don, like the Don, the like Don. A mafia Don. But so he's like, oh, your podcast, the Tomahawk Show with you and AJ Hawk is doing really well. I'm like, no, I'm not with AJ Hawk. I'm with Andrew Hawkins. Now he does have the ad hoc Twitter handle because he stole it from that little old lady in Western New York.
Yeah, lady, get with it.
All right, let's get back to Hawk's love for LeBron.
Yeah.
It's almost like Joe's love for Miles.
Yeah, it might be times two.
Miles.
I mean, when you watch he's doing, I don't know who's going to win the MVP. And then I'm on Twitter. People are coming at me because I'm doing the Michael and the LeBron tweets. And it's fun. It's sports. It's what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to make outrageous topics and let people debate about them on social media. So people are killing me. But I don't think there's anybody who could, and no offense to the Cavs team, because I love the supporting cast as well.
Mm, what do you love about them?
I love their
hopelessness.
I love that they play with LeBron.
I love that their teammates.
They're so good at celebrating when LeBron scores.
Yes. Did you see the SNL skit?
Yes, dude, that was so funny.
Bro. I've watched that maybe 150 times. But long story short, I don't think there's another player who could have taken this team to the finals. And for the way LeBron shows up in the big moments, for people to say he's not clutch and just to watch him over his career, it's like one of those things where you'll look back and be like, oh, what the hell were we talking about? Like, how was this dude not clutch? He was doing this with this amount of talent and this level, like scoring 40-point games and triple doubles, like 48 minutes back-to-back. That's crazy. That's like a crazy thing to me.
In his 15th season, too.
Yeah, he's like 42.
Easy now, we're the same age.
I know, you can't even walk up steps.
Yeah, bro. Man, it's true, I can't. I take the elevator.
Dunking on 21-year-olds. It took you 36 minutes to get from downstairs
that's true.
Up to the studio.
I'm pretty slow. But that's funny.
Yeah, big LeBron fan. Big fan of what the Cavs are doing. Obviously, my son is like a diehard. He wears literally the entire uniform, puts the black tights on, black LeBron shoes, full uniform, and does every shot that the Cavs do. While the game is going on.
That's awesome. I remember those days.
Top to bottom, exactly.
Yeah. I love LeBron, and I'm with you on that. Like, the more I watch him, the more I'm just amazed at what he's been able to do. That team that he's playing with, I mean, let's just be honest. It's not stacked like the Warriors or the Celtics or the Rockets. I mean, no offense to those other guys, but they're other guys.
Yeah.
No, and it's LeBron going one-on-one every single play.
And I don't feel bad about saying that because I was another guy.
Yeah.
And that's what I mean. Like, the equivalent to me are the players that LeBron is playing with. So I don't feel bad in saying that. That's okay. I just know if we had a team full of me's, you know, that's how you get to 1-15.
Our humble co-host, Andrew Hawkins.
That's right. You know,
that's humility right there. I know. That's realism.
I like that. Mark that one down. First attempt at humility by Andrew Hawkins.
Not this guy who thinks he is. Like, I'm like the LeBron version of LeBron. Okay, Joe.
So,
what are LeBron stats since you hugged him? Because I think ever since.
It was the magic hug. I like where you're going with this.
This dude has turned into a different animal.
Dude, that's
like
a great point.
Like, he took your energy. From you, like any amount of energy you had left in your NFL
I definitely
career,
don't have
took
any
and put it on the basketball court.
That's a great point. So my take on LeBron is he is so efficient on offense. Like, there's a lot of good one-on-one players in the NBA, but his ability to get the ball, go one-on-one, and end up with an efficient shot on that offensive series is beyond amazing, and it's the best ever. Because just being good at one-on-one basketball would not be able to will that team that they have to the finals again.
Right.
Like we saw it even James Harden. Great one-on-one player, great player overall, but he was not able to will his team to wins like LeBron is, because LeBron's so big and he can get to the hoop and score when he's not draining it from the outside.
Exactly. I mean, the Rockets missed 27 straight three-pointers. Just if they took 10 of those 27 right. possessions and had somebody to be able to go to the bucket and score two, the way LeBron is smart enough to understand that, they would have won that game and the Golden State Warriors wouldn't be in the championship.
Yep.
But they were just jacking up threes because that's what they think they had to do. And it cost them in the long run. Mm-hmm. Who would you say was the second best player on the Cavs?
Right now?
Yes.
In the Probably JR. But he's so streaky.
It depends on what game.
Like
somebody steps up every game. Somebody new.
I agree.
Jeff Green last game.
Uncle Jeff, man. I do love the supporting Cavs.
Yeah. To me, here's my take on Kevin Love. Good offensively, but he can't do it himself on offense. Like, he kind of has to get the ball in the right spot. You had to kind of get him the ball, get it cleared out, get the right pick and rolls, and then he can kind of work his, like, mid-post move kind of action. And he's a pretty good shooter, but he's a liability on defense. I think JR is probably a better player for that team, but he's so streaky. Like, he'll go drain, like, four threes in a row, and then he'll keep jacking them up and miss 15 in a row.
See, that's the thing about this team. Like, when I look at the Warriors...
He's got no conscience.
They're stacked, right? The Warriors are stacked. This team is like... It's like watching a television show to me. I don't even think of them as players. It's like they're like characters. So I like love J.R. Smith's character.
Yeah.
Who comes in...
I mean, they're a lot of fun.
Yeah, like, you never know who's going to
step up. They got personality.
And the personalities around them make it really, really
It was interesting. The game that I went to last week or week before that, Kyle Korver had two blocks. And it was very apparent that Brad Stevens' game plan was, when Kyle Korver's in the game, give his man the ball and make him go one-on-one, because they didn't think he could stop anybody. And he had two big blocks, and the crowd was all excited. It was like that kid that's like your 15th man that gets in the game and makes it like a layup at the end of the game, and the crowd is so happy for him. That was like when Kyle Korver was playing defense and getting two blocks. So he's their next best scorer, but he can't dribble and he can't play defense.
He's like
you have to give him the ball.
He's like the opposite of Deli.
Yeah, exactly.
He couldn't shoot. Yeah, he was a scrapper. He played D. And
that's a great point. He can dribble.
Deli and Korver were the same person.
It would be the best ever.
He'd be working on four NBA championships in a row.
That's really funny.
So that was interesting to me. That you think JR is the best. So if you got one shot to win the game, it's got to be a three, and LeBron can't take it. You want it to be JR?
Well, I want Korver to take it. Okay. Korver is clearly a pure shooter, but if you don't get him the ball when he's spotted up, he can't make it, because he can't dribble and he can't make his own plays at all if he can't dribble.
Jeez.
And he's not a big guy like Kevin Durant that can just drain the ball with somebody in his face. He's got a quick release, but it's not like he's getting the ball, making a couple of pump fakes, faking like he's going to the hoop and hitting a fadeaway. Like, you get him the ball, and he's throwing it up as fast as he possibly can before it gets stolen or blocked.
So you're going JR, would you want to take the shot?
I'm saying if LeBron's not taking the shot, the ball should be in JR's hands, or he should be the one coming off of a screen to get the ball. Because he can shoot, but he can also take it to the hoop, and he can still kind of create. Korver can't do any of those things.
I'm actually going with Jeff Green.
Well, based on what happened in the last game,
he has like that old man
over time.
Like, he's like, I don't know. You know how, like, in the NFL, like, there might be a kid who is the best, a best wide receiver as far as ability goes. But if it's third down in the fourth quarter and you need a first down, you're going to Miles Austin
instead. Big moment, Miles.
Instead of JG, who is a freak and probably the most athletic receiver in the NFL. You're going to go to Miles Austin because it's just a different level of accountability at that stage of their careers. That's Jeff Green for me. So with that shot, I'm going with Jeff because I feel like he understands it a little bit.
That's
more.
Fair.
That's my take.
That's fair. Danny Boy, what's your take?
Picking from who's left?
You can
take Kevin Love. Yeah, no. I think Kevin Love is very good at threes, but, I mean, I would take Korver then if you guys took your guys.
Well, no,
so what are you taking? I'm confused.
Kevin Love is
Everybody's left. Available except Kevin's got a concussion, I guess, and he's out.
I'm going Korver. If I need 1-3 to win the game, Korver.
Okay. He said, because I would take Kevin Love. Well, good, because nobody else took him.
All right, hang on, Dan. We're not talking about the three-point contest in the All-Star game. We're talking about within the flow of the end-of-the-game situation, you're drawing up a play for Korver.
They put four guys on LeBron.
Yeah, LeBron drives to the hole, kicks it out to Korver.
So you're drawing up a play for Korver.
You're getting Korver in the game.
Yeah, if it's got to be a three, Kyle Korver.
All right. I can't argue.
Fair enough.
I mean, you're talking about driving to the hole with J.R. Smith. You just need a
three. Well, I didn't know it had to be a three, but even still. Because if it has to be a three, then they're going to play defense a little bit differently. They're going to be taking away the three.
We are going way too far down this.
Yeah. When's the last time we played basketball? When we were 14?
Let's get some NBA Finals predictions in. We want to get Hawk on record. He has already predicted that the New England Patriots will win the NBA championship.
Yeah. It was an easy one, to be honest. I'm going to go with the Cavs. And this is a completely homer. This is 100% picking with my heart. I'm going the Cavs in seven. Because there's no way that the Cavs will. There's no way the Warriors are going to lose in less than seven games.
Really?
And I don't think so. I think they're too talented. Because I think LeBron is the best player in the league. But then you go player number two is in this series, probably Steph Curry. Yeah, number Durant. Three is probably Kevin Durant. Number four is probably Klay Thompson.
He was killing in that last game. Klay Thompson was unconscious.
The fifth best player in the series is probably Draymond Green. The sixth, I would say probably Kevin Love overall. Kevin Love, who's left? Livingston will probably be,
he's a pretty good player.
That's what I mean.
Iguodala's healthy.
So they have the next four best players besides LeBron. That's just a lot of – it's going to take everything for us to beat the team. So I think the Cavs in seven.
I think what needs to happen – I'd like to see the Cavs win in seven. But I think what needs to happen is the Cavs need to play slow, limit the possessions, get the ball down the court, give it to LeBron, let him go one-on-one for 24 seconds every single time, and then somehow play as good a defense as you can. Because if you saw that game seven, like when it got away from the Rockets was when they were missing threes and they were letting the Warriors transition down the field, down the court in fast break offense, get quick shots. That's not good for anybody playing the Warriors. Right. You got to be able to somehow stop the transition game, get your guys back, play defense, make them set up some type of an offense, and that gives yourself a chance. But if they're just running down, throwing the ball to Klay Thompson in the corners, it's over.
I want LeBron not to foul for the first three quarters, first three and a half quarters.
Why?
Because halfway through the fourth, I want Kevin Durant to come to the lane. And I want LeBron to just put a forearm in his chest. And then I want Steph Curry to come down. And I want him to hack him on top of his head. And I want them to feel what 260 pounds at 6'8" feels like coming through the lane. And let them know, like, that's two. I got four more to give with 6 minutes left. You make the decision of what you want to do for the rest of this game. That's what I want. That's all
so
I ever
all three
want.
Of those guys are going to stand 5 feet beyond the three-point arc and hit fadeaway threes. And you're going to lose by 20.
Okay. So that's our NBA talk for the day.
So we got to finish with this.
I'm
going to
get on record, though, and just say Cavs in six.
Cavs in six. I like it.
Cavs in six.
So the new Browns cornerback, Demarius Randle, says if the Cavs win the title, he'll buy everyone who retweets that tweet a Cavs jersey. So obviously, I haven't retweeted it yet, but I'm about to as soon as I get out of the studio because I'm getting my jersey. But it's funny. He's a player that just came from Green Bay. He's obviously an NBA fan, like a lot of.
He's a Wisconsin guy.
I don't know if he's a Wisconsin guy, but he lived in Wisconsin when he was playing for the Packers. But it is funny that he's like kind of trolling Cavs and Browns fans on the team that he just got to.
He clearly doesn't get how Cleveland works.
Yeah, not yet. We need to bring him on the Tomahawk show and set him straight.
A little Tomahawk media training from my man, DR.
Yep.
How many tweets did it have? Last time you checked,
226,000.
So he's gonna. So you figured jerseys are going for about $100. So he's gonna have to pay $22.6 million to people who retweeted and give him their jerseys.
So I think it's safe to say he's not a man of his word if the Cavs win, because I've seen his rookie deal and it doesn't have $44 million on it.
$22 million.
Because as we all know, half your money goes to taxes when you're in that
Uncle Sam bracket. When you go to the league, Uncle Sam goes.
Yeah, he gets half.
Well, he didn't say it was going to be one of those authentic jerseys. It could be one of those T-shirt jerseys. You know,
even still, that's like
you
cut it in half.
$30
The NFL is going to be very happy.
So he's going to buy 8 million in t-shirts now? I mean, you might as well buy a t-shirt company and have them print LeBron t-shirts.
He gets 3% of it back if that helps, because he gets his revenues cut from the NFLPA of his own jersey. He'll be the leading jersey seller, and he'll get the 3% per jersey back.
No.
Wait,
no,
he's not giving his jersey.
He's buying a Cavs jersey.
Oh, He's not buying Demarius Randle.
No, there's not that many people that want Demarius Randle jerseys.
Oh man,
he wants a Cavs jersey. He wants to buy everyone LeBron jerseys, or maybe
he's gonna get Joe a Kyle Korver jersey.
Yeah, he's gonna get me a J.R. Smith. Hey, me and J.R. were neighbors.
Randle jersey. If they win, he doesn't have to honor anybody else's. Just get me a Demarius Randle jersey, and we'll call it even.
I'll wear a Demarius Randle jersey.
No? Okay.
I'll wear a Demarius Randle jersey. I'll buy it for all three of us if he even buys 100 Cavs jerseys if the Cavs win. We'll put the bar low there.
That's going to be the classic post and Twitter delete.
Yeah. All right, we're 100 days away from NFL kickoff, which means we're in the period of the NFL season where absolutely nothing is going on.
Nothing
so
matters.
Now we need to give our bold predictions for the 2018 NFL season.
Bold predictions. Who's going to start us off? Because I have nothing.
Here's my bold prediction. I'm going to predict that.
It's going to be the easy one. I can predict what Joe's about to predict.
Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are about to go through a really nasty divorce.
Wow.
They're going to lose 3 games in a row midway through the season.
Finish 13-3.
and things are going to implode, and one of those two guys is going to put their foot down and tell the owner, it's them or me. That's my first bold prediction. Who would like to back that one up? Go
I'm
next.
I'm
going to
double down on your prediction, and I'm going to say that my bold prediction is Tom Brady is going to retire after next year. That's my bold prediction.
Okay.
I think Tom and Gronkowski will retire together.
Really?
Yes. All that's right. My bold prediction.
That's bold.
Mine is that the Tomahawk Show will continue to be the number one podcast in the history of podcasts.
Danny, we said bold. That's
bold.
Not bold.
That's
a gimme.
That's on the reg, is what I like to call that.
Yeah. So we need 3 predictions. So my next prediction is the Cleveland Browns are going to win equal to or more than 8 games in this season.
I like that. I think we're on the same page there. But I can't let you have an extra prediction than me. So I'm going to do another one, and I'm going to say that Jimmy G and the San Francisco 49ers are going to win 12-plus games next year.
Danny boy, he gave up.
I'm not bold enough.
Yeah, you aren't bold. What are you going to predict? That the sun is going to come up tomorrow?
Wow. All right.
What else we got?
So this is a fun one, and I know this was at the top of Andrew's list because he loves talking about his time with the Patriots and reminding everybody about those glorious 4 days.
Before you get into this, here's a little Andrew Hawkins fun fact for you.
You played for the Patriots.
I played for the New England Patriots. Continue, Joe.
I knew that was coming. Too easy.
That's fabulous. So anyways, the 49ers have a defensive end by the name of Cassius Marsh, and he played a little while for the Patriots last season.
Longer or shorter than me?
He was longer because he played during the preseason and the regular season.
He got in games. Okay.
Continue. Yeah, I think he was in games. He was actually a member of the franchise. So anyways, he came out, and he was honest. You know, one of the things that NFL fans hate the most from players is when they're honest.
Yeah,
and they say, you know what? Being a Patriot wasn't a lot of fun, you know? I've played a lot of places for great coaches, for Super Bowl winning coaches, and they had fun. You know, they worked hard, but they were able to have fun and have laughs. And there wasn't a lot of laughs. There wasn't a lot of fun with the Patriots. Bill Parcells nicknamed Bill Belichick Doom when he was on his staff with the Giants in the 80s.
If Parcells nicknamed you
right.
Doom.
Because that's Bill Belichick's personality around football. Everything is misery. He makes everyone around him miserable. He makes the players' days miserable. He makes the coaches miserable. He thinks of every way to ruin your life.
Oh, wow, Joe.
But they win, so everyone accepts it, right?
Right.
He got run out of Cleveland. Now, granted, they moved to Baltimore, but he got run out of Cleveland because people just couldn't put up with him. And when you're not winning, they don't want to be around somebody that acts like the world is ending based on every little thing. Did he?
Take Cleveland to the playoffs? Yes.
Yeah.
1 year?
Yeah, 1994.
And then the next year.
The team moved in 95.
Yeah, the next year they started out terribly. So he had like 2 bad years.
Actually, the team started off good in 95.
Was it?
It was like 2-1, 3-0. But then the move was announced and it just, you know, fell apart.
Right, it tanked. But anyways, he's an exceptional coach, but people have a hard time putting up with that if you're not winning. And even when you're winning, when guys leave, they're going to be honest, and they're going to say, hey, it was awful. It was not fun. Now, I will say
– fun is subjective.
it depends on how important your career is to being fun, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, people always say, pick a career that you love so that work will, it'll never feel like you worked a day in your life, right? Uh-huh. Well, a lot of people are like, hey, football, I love football, so I'm going to do that.
Yeah.
But then they run into like a regime like Belichick's where he's taking the fun out. He's specifically extracted the fun from everything you do so that there's no laughter and no distraction whatsoever from like your specific job, and then you never look at your friends' papers and enjoy whatever they're doing. You just look down your narrow tunnel vision, which is a very militaristic philosophy. That's really where Bill Belichick kind of got his philosophy from, was the military. I think his dad coached at like Navy for a long time, and so he has that like military background, and he does a lot of reading on military. So he realizes that, you know, the most efficient groups of people working together were always in the military throughout history, and this is how they ran their organizations and stuff. So I would say if you talk to a lot of people in the military, they'd probably say, you know, it wasn't a lot of fun, but I had a lot of good experiences and made a lot of good friends, went through tough times, but it made me a better person. And I imagine if you asked Cassius Marsh, he would probably say the same thing. The problem is, though, when you play for – he played for Pete Carroll in Seattle, and now he's in the San Francisco with our man Kyle Shanahan. You see that there's more than one way to do things. And you see that you can work hard, you can have success – but you can also enjoy the process for more than just winning,
right?
Which is what the Patriots, basically the argument forever from Patriots fans and Patriots players is, well, we win, so that's the only thing that's important.
Yeah.
But you can understand where Cassius is coming from, and he's honest, and the fans have annihilated him for it.
Well, look, I get both sides of it. Now, I'll say this. I wasn't a at-work fun guy. Looking back, football was really, really fun. When I was in there, it felt like lives were at stake.
Well, certainly they are, because your livelihood is at stake based on what I do and your kids' livelihood. You got a mortgage to pay. You got, you know, the expensive private school that you send all your kids to, your $5 million house. That taxes aren't free on that thing.
That's just the pool.
And that's the pool house. And if that crumbles down, how are you going to go home to your wife and tell her, I just got cut, we can't afford our mortgage, we got to move the kids out of the school? I mean, you're changing lives, so it is important. Let's not act like it's not important.
I've had coaches who, I don't want to say didn't like me, but they learned pretty quickly that I didn't joke around on the playing field. Like, they would try to lighten the mood up a little bit, and I wasn't that guy. Like, no, this isn't a joke. This isn't a game to me. Leave me alone until after we're done with our job. So I say that to say, had I gone to New England at a different point in my career, I feel like for myself, it would have been a match made in heaven. It would have been super pressure. I get that. But I would put that pressure on myself anyway. Like, I honestly, probably until 2015, was the first year that I'm like, oh, man, I really am an NFL player. Like, because that whole time I would just think to myself, like, they're going to find me out. If I make one bad play, they're going to get rid of me. And I didn't get comfortable. Like, I'm talking about in a practice from day to day. Like, until probably halfway through the 2015 season or after I got my concussions and I finished it, it kind of put it in perspective for me. But before that, every practice felt like a game. That's how much stress, anxiety, pressure I would put on myself, that I would, like, lose sleep over practice because I felt like one play wrong and everything was going to come crashing down. That is how New England is. That's the pressure they want you to put on themselves. That's the kind of effort they want you to give every day. And if you have a collection of guys, 50-plus guys that do it that way, you're probably going to be pretty good, right? I say that to say some people like that.
Let me jump here real quick and say something. It's interesting what you just said to me, because I've talked to a lot of great players, not only in football, but people that were great at their job outside of just football. And what you said about feeling like you were going to be exposed is something that I've felt a lot during my career, that a lot of other great players that I've talked to have felt. And it's interesting because that a lot of times becomes the driving motivator behind your success. And it's pretty amazing how many successful people have that feeling deep down inside, like, I'm fooling people. I'm really not as good as everyone thinks I am. Right. So I really need to work extra hard so that I'm not exposed at any one moment. Like, that was the feeling that I had for probably my first 8 years of my career, like, oh man, they think I'm a Pro Bowler, but like one time I give up one sack and all of a sudden I'm going to be exposed and they're going to realize I'm not really as good as everyone thinks I am.
Yeah.
And it's interesting how that drives you. But anyways, go ahead. I'm sorry to cut you off, but it's fascinating. True. And I think to me, not that I'm going to put words into Cassius Marsh's mouth, but I don't think that's necessarily what he's talking about.
Right.
But I'll let you finish your point, and then I'll come back to mine.
So I don't think that's what he's talking about, but there does come a time in your career where it's like a weird balance, because I'll be hard on myself, but for somebody who doesn't see that kind of hard work, that determination, and doesn't value it, I also have a hard line there too. Like, mother effer, you see me out here working, like there's certain things you don't got to tell me. Like, I wasn't a guy, people could yell at me. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But I'm not a guy you have to yell at. Because honestly, if you tell me something one time, it'll be fixed. You won't never have to worry about it ever again. And as you know, there is coaches out there who just yell for the sake of yelling or talk to you bad for the sake of talking to you bad because they think that's a good way to coach. When the action, from my perspective as a player, everybody needs different things, right? So there's some of that to what Cassius is talking about. Mm-hmm. That when you go to New England, you're adapting to the way they do things.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a leverage thing. Like if I was Tom Brady, who probably has felt like he's outgrown that leverage, like, okay, mm-hmm. now you need me just as much as I need you. I'm not trying to – don't belittle me anymore. Mm-hmm. Don't talk to me a certain way.
Right.
Like, there's certain things I'm not going to put up with. But when you're coming in from a guy who's coming from a bad team and probably your career is going to take off because you're going to win 13 games and people are going to talk about you the way they had never have, and you're probably going to get more endorsement deals than ever, and the other 31 teams who just look to pick off your players because you're the best – are probably now going to have a newfound value for you. Yeah, you got to kind of fall in line. And if you don't fall in line with that, this isn't the place for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it was just more than anything, mm-hmm. where he's at in his career and where the Patriots are, it just ain't meshing because mm-hmm. Bill ain't changing for nobody.
Yeah.
I'm here to get W's. If you ain't about W's, right. if anything else matters to you outside of winning, if you want to have yeah. a conversation with me about anything other than football, this isn't the place for you.
Mm-hmm. I've had a lot of friends that have played for the Patriots. I've talked to a lot of guys that spent their whole career there. And I think, generally speaking, the issue that those people have, if they have an issue, I'm not saying everyone like complains and bitches right. and moans about their time in the Patriots, but overwhelmingly, people always say, I accepted it because we were good and we won. But the things that the players that I talked to disliked the most, it wasn't, you know, how hard they made you practice or how much they made you study or like the unrelenting discipline and the lack of flexibility. Like there's a 24-inch snowstorm and you show up 1 minute late in the morning for the team meeting and he sends you home.
Yeah.
That's not even what they're talking about. Like a lot of people on the outside would see that and say, oh, that's unreasonable. But Bill has a way of doing things that says we treat everybody the same way and we expect you to be here at the start of the meeting. And I don't care what the excuses are because there's no excuses allowed.
Right.
Personally, I love that. And I think that's not when people complain about the Patriots, I think the fans think it's those things like, oh, so what? They make you guys work hard. They make you study a lot of film. They coach you hard. They make you practice hard. They expect you to show up on time. Yeah, I do that for $30,000 a year at my job. Yeah. I think overwhelmingly fans think that that's what players like this are talking about. But I think what they're talking about is how the Patriots organization and Bill Belichick specifically belittles the players to kind of put them in their place and make them subordinates and the mind games that they play with the players to get the most out of them.
Yeah.
Now, I've never played for him, so what do I know? But I have played for a lot of coaches.
I've played for him.
James. Right, you did, so maybe you can go ahead and tell us.
I don't know if you noticed or not, but I played for the Patriots.
So I've
continue.
I've had
– there's my humble co-host.
I've had a number of coaches that were with the Patriots and then came to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that I hated the most was the mind games. It was telling you had a bad practice when you know darn well you had a good practice because they're kind of trying to motivate you for the next practice.
Right.
Calling you out in the team meeting for something you did on the practice field that's unrelated to football. Like, for instance, when we had one of the Patriots head coaches, the offensive linemen were supposed to stand on the sideline next to their coach during practice for whatever reason. I don't know, but it was like a discipline thing. Well, as a player, I wanted to visualize every snap of the practice. So I would kind of stand a little bit more away from him so I could be sort of behind the left tackle so I could visualize every snap he took so I could actually get an extra rep without actually being out on the field.
Yeah.
And he would call you out in the team meeting in front of everybody for not being a team player when what you were actually doing was trying to be better at your job to be a better team player overall.
Yeah.
But it was those constant mind games that made you walk on eggshells in the building. Yeah. And as an athlete, I'm the type of guy that if I sucked, I want you to tell me that I sucked, how I sucked and how I can improve it. If I was good, you don't have to say anything to me, but if I did something right,
yeah,
don't tell me that it was wrong just because you're trying to motivate me. And I think it's those mind games that people get fed up with that I think Brady's kind of fed up with, and that's why he's kind of staying away from OTAs right now. And overwhelmingly, that's the complaint that I hear from guys that go through that building. Now, what's your take? You've actually been there.
I think you're exactly right, but I don't think that's that much of a problem, I guess is my take, because I think a lot of guys need that. A lot of guys need to understand how important this is. A lot of guys, like the coaches that I've ever had problems with, and honestly, there's probably of the 100 plus coaches that I've played for, there's probably maybe one. Because in my mind, he didn't understand how important this shit was to me. He didn't understand how much what he did affected the lives of my family, the players around me, families, our livelihood. And he was just going on a whim on shit that it takes a lot of focus and attention and time that needs to be put into it that I didn't feel like he was putting into it. Because he was so worried about how he looked as opposed to getting the result that it made the rest of us look bad. That's the only time I've ever been pissed off with how a coach does things. And so with the New England way, Bill Belichick makes sure his players understand that. He makes sure his coaches understand that. He makes sure his lunch ladies understand that. His equipment staff, his dietitians, I don't care. Everybody understands how all of our asses are tied together, right? So if you want to come in and you want us to kiss your butt and you want to feel all fluffy inside and you want to be able to laugh and joke, this isn't the place for you. I don't need all 1,800 players in the league to be a New England Patriot. I need to find the 53 that understand what the hell I'm doing and why I'm doing it, and I can win a championship. So I'm not saying what you're saying is wrong. What I'm saying is I don't see that much of a problem with it.
Well, clearly they haven't had much of a problem with it because he's the best coach of all time and the most successful coach.
Goat.
And for some reason they find 53 people to show up every fall to their game. So obviously the paycheck is higher than the complaining. But it is interesting just to hear the complaining, but hey, as NFL players, we always find something to complain about.
We're always
going to
complain about something. What happens with the older guys, though, like the Tom Brady's, or you've seen guys who go through and then all of a sudden it goes sour after all the success. Because I always equate them to like the girlfriend who wants the bad boy. They chase the bad boy and they're like, oh, I want to change him. I'm going to change him. And then after like 10 years, he's still doing the same bull he was doing 10 years ago. And then you get frustrated because you couldn't change him. So I feel like players go in there and it's like, they know all the information we're just spitting out now. And they feel like, oh, but I've done this much for him. And I've won Super Bowls, or I've played in Pro Bowls, or I've done everything they've asked. I've taken the pay cuts time and time again. And they think eventually they're going to get, and they just keep moving the finish line on it. Like, no, you don't understand.
Yeah.
Like, when you're done, I don't care. I'm just going to get the next person to do what you do because I'll find somebody. Right? So I think that's where a lot of the relationships go bad over time with the New England
Patriots. That's what you're seeing right now with Brady. He's like, dude, look what I've done for this organization. You can count on me to show up and give my best.
Yeah.
Stop belittling me. Stop hassling me about every little thing that I do. Stop hassling me about my trainer that does my TB12 massage and all this diet program and everything. This is what works for me. Mm-hmm. It may not work for you, but it's worked for me for a long time. So just leave it alone.
Yeah,
and you know, and Bill's like, no.
I see Jimmy Garoppolo. He could be the. Right. I got another 15 years right here. And Tom was like, what do you mean you got another 15 years? I thought we had something special.
Oh, man.
Would Brady be at OTAs right now if Garoppolo was still on the team?
I don't think so.
Probably. I think so.
You think so? Yeah. I'll tell you why. I don't think so because he would have even more of a reason to stay away and show his frustration because in the fall, I believe him and his agent were the ones that said, we need to get rid of Garoppolo because I'm about to get Drew Bledsoe'd because Belichick is going to go with the younger guy and he's kind of pissed off at me and there's this relationship fraying going on.
But what I'm saying, like, so if Jimmy's on the team, what benefit does it give Tom not to be there? Is he holding out? Because that's what Bill Belichick wants you to do.
Yeah.
He wants you to get
because
Drew Bledsoe.
Well, yeah, because Tom knows that his value still is as high as ever. He could sign tomorrow for $40 million with whatever team he wants. Now, granted,
he doesn't want to.
He doesn't need the money. It's not a money situation for him, but he needs to make a point. And how does he make a point that he's pissed off at Belichick other than just not showing up at OTAs?
But he couldn't just say that?
No, I don't think he could say that. I mean, he's dropped the subliminal hints in his TB12 Facebook show or whatever.
Yeah.
But I think if he just came out and flat out just said, hey, Belichick, I hate you. You're an asshole. Like,
I don't think he could
play. That might not work out so well. He's playing. He's doing it right now.
I know, but because now he knows Jimmy's out of there. Jimmy was on the team.
Yeah.
What we know about Jimmy G so far, his body of work, which is I don't think he's lost a game yet as a starter, number one. from what I talked to by my intel from the 49ers, this dude is like the real, real deal.
Mm.
Like, I think Belichick would be just gearing up to go with Jimmy Garoppolo to the point that if Tom held out and came back, I could see Belichick saying Jimmy Garoppolo is our starter.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine?
You don't play chicken with Bill Belichick,
Can
man.
You imagine?
When he has the leverage.
That's true. He
doesn't have the leverage right now, so he needs Tom Brady.
That's true.
But I don't know, man. Here's a fun fact. I got real fun facts this time.
All right.
Not Hawk play.
Fun not facts.
Fun not facts. Bill Belichick. They did like the genealogy thing. These are some of his distant relatives, like cousins, like direct.
I can't wait to see this.
He is a cousin of former presidents Grover Cleveland and William Taft. He is.
Is that the guy that invented Cleveland?
I think this guy Cleveland was named after. He is cousins to Warren Buffett and J.P. Morgan.
Really?
Yeah. This isn't a joke. This is real stuff. He's cousin to Clint Eastwood. The actor, astronaut Alan Shepard,
my favorite,
radical abolitionist John Brown. You probably don't even know who that is. Hit the Google. Singer Harry Chapman and Hugh Hefner. Those are all Bill Belichick.
Interesting.
Distant cousins through his family lineage.
Says a lot about him, let me tell you.
Yeah. All those people together make Bill Belichick.
Make who he is today.
I would have guessed those.
The influences on his life are staggering. Well, I think we've talked about the Patriots enough. Let's get into the great Tomahawk Q&A, which is always everyone's favorite.
Ooh, yeah. We'll get to the top 100 players next week.
Yeah, we just don't have enough time.
Per usual.
You can tweet us using the hashtag Tomahawk, or you can tweet it at TomahawkNFD. Or go to our Reddit.
Self-promotion. He is not a humble co-host. Not a humble co-host. NFD.
Tweet at TomahawkNFD.
And it doesn't even have to be questions. It can be statements as we've seen in the past. And we're going to start off with a couple statements that came from our Reddit page from SwiftStrike4.
Can I just say statements are my favorite? Because usually they're hating on me and you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly.
That's so funny.
I've seen some NFD hate for once. Somehow they never make it on the show.
Funny how that works.
I've never seen any NFD hate.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
No NFD hate. Looks like I know what I'm pulling up next show. Go ahead.
First statement. I can't tell if Joe intentionally drafts terrible teams or if Hawk is really good at drafting.
Man.
And also a statement from the same person again. So he took the time to do it twice on our Reddit page. Again, not really a question, just a suggestion. You guys should really restructure the draft so Joe makes all five picks first and then Hawk can make his pick. Joe needs all the help he can get because his drafts are simply terrible.
Oh, man. Thanks, Mom.
What was that Twitter handle again?
Mama Hawk.
At Mama Hawk.
Mama Hawk 1616.
Andrew's been spending a lot of time. The reason he really doesn't have any time in his life, it's not this ESPN and all this broadcasting. It's because he's doing the Kevin Durant. He's got like 30 burner accounts that he just hates on me and NFD all day on social media.
I got to keep them equal.
This one comes from DJ Mitchell 94. Love the podcast, guys. Still have yet to hear a mention of what the Vegas Golden Knights are doing in hockey. Would love to hear your take on this historic Stanley Cup final.
I was going to say earlier, after we finished the Cavs, I was going to say, why don't we ever talk about hockey and what's going on? Now, I'm not a hockey fan. I like hockey. I do that hockey.
I like hockey?
I feel like we probably should. We're in the Stanley Cup, so we probably should talk about it. We'll figure out what's going on and we'll do it next week. Thanks, DJ. We're going to get caught up here.
This next one comes from M Fields 4. How many grapes can you fit up your nose at one time?
Wow. I don't know what's worse, the comment or the fact that Dan chose that one to read in the show.
We must not have had a lot of questions this week. Can you fit any grapes up your nose?
I could probably fit one a nostril.
So two?
Yeah, two total.
I don't think I can fit any. Anything they would have to be really small. They'd have to be really small grapes to fit up my nose.
Man, this off season is taking a turn. We're running out of topics.
Whoa.
Here.
All right,
the next one comes from Justin Ball. Best way to pass time while driving from Las Vegas to Cleveland, listening to the Tomahawk Show. Thanks, Joe, NFD, and Hawk for making the drive tolerable. You inspired a few drafts, all in which Gerard 216 lost. Question for you guys. What is the longest road trip you have ever taken?
Longest road trip. I drove with my family from Pennsylvania, Johnstown, Pennsylvania, to Mobile, Alabama. I've also driven from Cleveland to Tampa, Florida. That's like recent.
It's like 18 hours or so?
Yeah, about 17 and a half. Those are my two longest.
So Joe, I would say that's limo drivers. That's about the average there. Yeah. So actually, when I was, 1 year old, my parents took me on one of my dad's.
Like it was yesterday.
Oh, hang on.
My mom was pregnant with me, and I was told we drove.
So I was 1 year old, and my dad had like a business meeting in like New Mexico. We were living in Milwaukee at the time. And so we flew there, and then I didn't get back on an airplane until I was like a senior or junior in high school being recruited to play college football. And I think I flew to Nebraska with my dad or something. And it was really cool. I was like, wow, this is awesome. Like, this flying stuff is really luxurious. Back in the day, they had Midwest Airlines, which was supposedly all like first class seats. Now, they weren't actually all first class, but they were actually all really nice seats in the airplane. And from Milwaukee, you could fly all over the country. It was great. But that airline went bankrupt, I think. So, unfortunately.
They usually do.
So, anyways, my long-winded story is when we were kids, if we were going to go anywhere, we were going to get in the old-school 1992 Chevy conversion van, and we'd drive there, right? So, we couldn't afford plane tickets or anything like that. But when I was, I think, in middle school, my family, my aunt and my uncle, my grandma, were going to take, like, a ski trip out in Utah. Because my parents, we liked to snow ski. You know, when we were growing up. So we drove from Milwaukee to like Salt Lake City, Utah, which was, I think, 30 some hours in the conversion van with like 9 family members.
Cold cuts.
It was brutal. Let me tell you, we had one of those old school TVs where you could put like a VHS in and then it plugged into like your cigarette lighter. Ew. But it didn't have enough juice to get a lot of volume because a cigarette lighter is only like 110 amps or whatever it is. It's not like a regular outlet. So we could watch our VHSs, but we couldn't turn it up enough to hear it. So all we could do is watch it on this little like 8-inch TV that was like 200 pounds that we stuck in the van just so people had some entertainment. So that was my longest trip.
I actually drove an RV 10 hours recently. I took the fam to ESPN. Like, I had to go like do a bunch of stuff. And like I said, I do so much traveling, I wanted to spend some time. So I rented an RV. Threw everyone in an RV and I drove to ESPN, did my thing, drove back. Kids loved it. Now I'm shopping for RVs.
Are you really?
I am.
It'd be great to get an RV sponsor because I'd love to get an RV because I'm having my fourth kid.
We want everything free.
Yeah.
Anybody got any
million-dollar RVs they could just give to the Tomahawk Show? We'll put your logo on the side. We promise.
I'll tat it on my forehead. Yeah. The right RV.
Yeah, but now I'm going to have 4 kids this summer, and there's just no chance we can freaking fly anywhere ever again.
No.
It's impossible.
Trust me.
3 is already impossible.
It'll cost you $30,000 every time.
Well, not only cost, but like brain cells. Like, I feel like half my brain is dead from exhaustion after you fly with kids. So after number 4 comes, no more flying. We're just not doing it. So everywhere we're going to go, it's either a car ride or we ain't going.
Or you're going by yourself.
Oh, I'm going by myself. Hey, get kids. Here's some crackers and some Doritos and Mountain Dew. We'll see you in a week. Here's some money for pizza. You can order Domino's or something.
How old were you when you took your first flight, NFD?
The first one I can remember, I was probably about 7 or 8. We flew down to Disney World.
Yeah. I've never been to Disney World. Is that bad? Because I actually work for Disney now.
And you have three kids. Free trip.
But I want them to, like, I could take my kids to Disney. But I spent my entire childhood, like, man, I want to go to Disney. I want to go to Disney. Like, one day I'll be able to go to Disney. And then I didn't, right? So my philosophy is I don't want to take my kids until they appreciate it. So they beg me constantly to go to Disney. And I want to keep building up the anticipation so that when I take them, it's a big deal. Otherwise, they won't realize how big of a deal it is. They don't realize that not every kid gets to go to Disneyland or Disney World. So I'm trying to build up that anticipation so when I take them, they're like, Dad, you're the best dad ever in the world, and I can't believe you did this for us.
Are you going to rent the RV and drive down there?
No. So what are they going to have to do to prove that they appreciate it enough? That's my question. Like, yeah. You have to mow the lawn 100 times or, like, clean your dirty underwear, like, 1,000 times. Like, what is that symbol of their appreciation that they can show you?
Because what, your kids are 7 and 3?
Yeah, 6 and 3.
Okay.
Yeah, 6 and 3. I think you just keep dangling it. I mean, I think just time.
It's time.
Over
it's
time, you just want it more and more and more. It's not like Disneyland is, it's not going to get any less awesome. It's been dope since I was 5. So, you know, like, they're still going to want it no matter what, whether I dangle something or not.
Are they going to give up on it at some point, though? Like, oh, Dad will never take us, so we're just not going to care about it anymore.
I don't think so, because I still want to go, and I'm 32. Yeah.
Are you the Bill Belichick of parenting?
I am.
No wonder you're always backing
them
up.
The Patriot School of Parenting.
Jerk.
I just keep moving the finish line.
It's funny that you said the appreciation thing. It reminds me of a story when my daughter, my oldest, was like 1 and a half. We were at the Pro Bowl, and up until that point in her life, maybe she was 2, but up until that point in my life, my wife was like dead set against her eating ice cream. She's like, kids, they don't even know what ice cream is. She can't have any of the ice cream. You know, first child, they're eating, you know, broccoli and everything, every meal. They're eating great meals, no sugar, the whole deal. And her thing was, she's not going to be able to have ice cream until she's old enough to appreciate it. And I'm like, how can she appreciate something she doesn't even know what it is? Unless you give it to her first, then she'll appreciate it. And it was funny because when you're grandparents, they can get away with everything, right? Like, if I would have just taken my oldest and taken her to the ice cream stand and getting her ice cream, I would have been grounded for years. I'd still be grounded. But since my wife's dad, so my daughter's grandfather, took her when we were in Hawaii to the ice cream stand one morning, and my wife didn't know about it and gave her ice cream. And my daughter's been addicted to ice cream ever since.
Oh, I love it.
She's probably doing an ice cream flavor draft some point in the future.
That's a good point.
That is a good draft.
All right. Any more questions?
I got one last statement here.
Oh, more statements.
Dog Pound Ireland. I guess it is a question. NFD, can you get the boys on point for this? Tomaflock is a group. Tomaflockian is singular. Tomaflockians is plural. I can't take Hawk or Joe saying Tomaflocks again.
You just confuse me.
Yeah, I'm lost.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
I don't have a degree of higher education.
Tomaflock is the whole group.
Okay, so the Tomaflock.
A singular Tomahawk fan is a Tomahawkian.
So when would you ever use the Tomaflockians?
When you're talking about one fan, I guess.
So what was the third one?
He just doesn't like when you say Tomaflocks. That's
okay,
that's,
but he said,
that's Dog Pound Ireland's point.
Is a group. A Tomaflockian is singular. What was the plural one?
Tomaflockians.
So that's talking about multiple Tomaflockians, but not
multiple people.
The whole group. Yeah, members. Yeah.
Well, what happens if there's subcategories of Tomaflocks? So, like, there's a Tomaflock in the United States. There's a Tomaflock in Ireland. So when you're talking about multiple groups of Tomaflockians, it would be the Tomaflocks.
Tell them to go flock themselves. All right. How about that?
I got an interesting question since Dan can't find any more questions. All he can find is statements about how we suck.
I have an interesting question since that was a perfect ending to the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's continue. Yeah.
So here's a great question. Do you guys know what a group of turkeys is called?
No.
Wisconsin trivia. In my inner city neighborhood. What do we get?
Tune in next time to the Tomahawk Show to find out what you call a group of turkeys in the proper nomenclature.
That cliffhanger is going to have everybody at the edge of their seat for a whole other week.
We're going to bring
Googleable. It's not even
100,000 new listeners in because people can't wait to find out the answer.
And speaking of next week, we will be at the Tribe Game on June 5th.
Yes.
We'll have more details of what we're going to do exactly, but go to Indians.com, buy your ticket, meet us at the Indians game June 5th.
Yes. And as always, listen, subscribe, rate the show 5 stars. That does it for this episode of the Tomahawk Show. We had a lot of fun today. Actually being back together in studio, I think. It gets the chemistry going nice. What do we got next, Dan?
Joe Hawk yourself.
Damn right, dude.